Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's continue on at the stage here at the University of Illinois tent. We're glad to welcome a couple of folks to talk about transportation and trade and the global grain markets. With us today is Colin Waters. He's the Director of Exports and Logistics at the Illinois Corn Growers Association. Good morning to you, Colin. Thanks for being with us. Glad to have you on a panel again. A regular with us, as it turns out, somewhat. Yeah. Not an irregular with us, which is good to know, I suppose.
I appreciate that. I'm not really sure why.
That's good. And also with us today is Mark Wilson. He's the chairman of the U.S. Grains and Bioproducts Council, formerly U.S. Grains Council. Thank you very much. We appreciate you being here.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and you are from Toulon. You're a Stark County farmer?
Yeah, I farm up Toulon, raise corn, soybeans, some hogs, and I'm excited for this upcoming year.
Tell me a little bit about the name change and why that took place.
Yeah, we were always, for the last 30 years, the U.S. Grains Council, but we're also representing DDGs and ethanol. And when you go around the world and you try to get into a government meeting to talk about ethanol, and they see the U.S. Grains Council, they say, well, why are you here? Why should we invite you? And we always say we represent ethanol. So this name change to bioproducts then makes it a lot easier to get into those meetings. And we chose bioproducts rather than biofuels because we're looking in the future. It's not just what we have now, but there are also more products coming down the road made out of corn that we're going to also ship around the world.
Later today, we will have the folks from Primient here in Decatur on board to talk about that, and from IFAB as well, the working at the University of Illinois with IBRL in the biofuels and bioproducts area. So I think it's a great name change. Colin, let's talk a little bit about transportation at this point, really quickly. We have a lot of crop to move, although it's not clear that logistically we're going to move it at this point, at least part of it, not the part you represent all the time, but the soybean side, that will create some issues. I know you have had to been thinking about this as it's related to corn basis, maybe even soybean basis. What happens this fall and how elevators and the system deals with it and how big the ground piles might be?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question, right? I'm anticipating a lot of ground piles, to be perfectly honest, especially throughout central Illinois. The crop looks fantastic. Although, just talking with Mark, I think Mark might be trying to help us out on the supply side here with some of the disease issues that we're seeing pop up now. I don't know, it might not be so bad. But no, I think that logistics-wise, river's doing okay. We've had pretty much standard barge traffic moving south and north. There was a little bit of a hiccup slowdown earlier in the summer, but it's kind of taken care of itself. Rail seems to be working pretty well, too. So I'm anticipating kind of normal logistics at harvest time, but it's going to be a big crop. So we'll see.
Mark, and remind me exactly where Toulon is from I-80 and for those who don't know the state of Illinois.
Well, if you know where Peoria is and you know where the Quad Cities is, you draw a line between the two, we're about halfway in between. We're 40 miles northwest of Peoria.
So in the Galesburg, Knox County, but over one.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Around Kewaunee. Excellent. So I want to know a little bit about how bad southern rust and or tar spot are in your area currently.
Well, we have, when I start out with tar spot, was on the bottom leaf. I just went out last week. It's all the way on the very top leaf. The plant is still green all the way, but the tar spot is there. And you can see some southern rust here and there. I don't know. We did fungicide it early. I don't know how bad it's going to affect us yet, but it's got to affect us some.
So you did an early fungicide application, not a second application. Did you have tar spot at the time you did fungicide the first time around?
No.
Okay, but it developed, and it is a problem. probably enough to take yield off.
Yeah, we had it once before, but it came a little later in the season. And on that year, if we didn't spray, I know that year we lost 30-40 bushel on those crops. So we always spray everything. I know tar spot, if you don't spray and it comes early, it can be 130 to 160 bushel an acre.
Yeah, so you sprayed early, still have an issue. Not much in the way of southern rust. I was wondering whether that would be the case or not. I was on my own farm recently, which is near Springfield. I chose not to have it sprayed. Maybe got lucky, because I have neither in any real issue at this point. And looking at an extraordinarily good crop across the state of Illinois, Colin, what are you hearing from farmers from top to bottom? And let's start in the southern part of the state, because there it may be diseases somewhat, but it's really about the weather for them.
Yeah, the spring and early summer that we experienced in southern Illinois was pretty rough. Right, so there's a lot of guys that had to replant multiple times, and there's some guys that took prevent plant. They, don't want to do that, but they had to. So it's a really mixed bag. South of I-70, it's really variable. So some of those really low spots that just got flooded out are just gone. But there's some areas that are going to have a good yield, but it's a real mixed bag.
And they turned from incredibly wet through the spring,
dry.
Had to be prevent plant and just bone dry.
Yep, exactly. So it's going to be interesting in kind of the southern part of the state. Central looks really good. I think as you get further north, Henry, Knox, Stark, Bureau, things are good. But it's not, maybe not as what, not as much as we thought. it was looking like a real record year. And so that top end's probably come off. So I don't know if it's going to be a replay of 2021 again. I don't know that that's going to be the case. But I think there's going to be some guys that get in the field and realize that, wait a second, this is not what I was anticipating. Everything that I've heard out of northern Illinois is pretty positive. But I have heard that you get up into further up into Wisconsin, and it's pretty rough.
Yeah, surprising that northern Illinois, particularly the northwestern part of the state, is sounding better, because they were so dry, They were extraordinarily dry early on. Okay, so let's talk about some of the business that U.S. Grains does. When you are headed overseas, or you have delegations that are in country here, what do you talk to them about to convince them that coming to the United States is the most important decision that they can make for their grain needs, whether it's corn or wheat or other grains?
Well, the main thing we do is we have offices around the world, so we're starting to build that relationship all the time. Relationships are what makes trade. And having them come over, having them meet the farmer, and show them that we're not these big corporate farmers, that we are just average farmers who are families, right, and raise our family on the farm. And they can see that we care about what we do, we care about the land, we care about the crop we're growing, and they can see that what we're producing is number one corn. And it's all about, like I said earlier, it's all about relationship and showing them that we can have corn to their spot anytime, any week of the year. Our southern competitors, they only market one major time a year, where we can bring a load of corn any time of the year to wherever they want it.
Let's start with some rapid fire. Export market for corn, been very good for this marketing year.
Yep.
Expectations from USDA that it will be even better for the coming marketing year.
That's right. Yeah, that's what USDA says, and I fully anticipate that. If you just look at kind of stocks to use right now, prices are going to be low, right? Farmers aren't excited about that, obviously, but that's going to drive a lot of export business. And we need to get this corn, we need to get all the grain off the market right now. So that's about the, thank goodness the export market exists, and thank goodness it's gone so well. Because right now, I mean, if you put all of that corn back on the market, we would be in a really, really tough spot. But, you know, U.S. corn has been incredibly competitive against the Brazilian corn, and that's why that's really why we're seeing such big numbers. We haven't seen any, you know, major shifts out of, you know, that you could attribute to trade policy or anything like that. So really, this is a supply and demand function in my mind.
Yeah, not yet, and I'll ask both of you to comment on this, but Mexico is the number one export destination.
Correct.
For U.S. corn. Still working through a deal.
Yeah.
They have had drought conditions that have limited their corn production there. Should we be concerned in the new crop marketing year?
Well, I don't think so. Just purely on the basis of just the economics of it, we are by far the, you know, we are neighbors. We provide a lot of corn every year to the Mexican feeders, pretty much, right? So, in those feedlots, a lot of them are growing at like a 6-7% compound annual growth rate. So they just keep getting bigger and bigger, and I don't necessarily see I don't see an end in the near term to that. So I think that their demand for feed corn is going to be significant going forward, and I would certainly anticipate that in the coming marketing year.
Yeah, I don't see any change in that either. I mean, they bought the most corn of any country ever, more than China bought in their heyday. So that's just going to continue to grow. They have a good relationship with us. They like our corn. It goes right there. It's pretty fast and economical.
I'm sure you do, but when you talk about U.S. policy as it's related to exports, how often do you discuss tariffs and the issues that it will create? And what is the bottom line kind of problem? Is it just that the U.S. may or may not become a reliable source? You think that's the word you probably use? And the longer term impact, or are there other things?
Well, at the Grains Council, we try to stay away from the trade issues. We want to just make sure that they want to buy our products, and they know where they can go and how they can get them. And we really promote the use of our products and growing demand through chickens and poultry and all other ways they can raise corn.
I heard a story, and I'd like to know if you've heard this one and if there are other stories like it, that in the 1960s, as Japan had not been importing much U.S. corn, that the Grains Council decided that the best way to potentially get that to happen was to create a livestock market there. They looked at it and said, well, the Japanese housewife is picking up one egg a day or two or three for the week. But if we could get them in the grocery stores just to put eggs in by the dozen, by default, more would be sold and more corn would be needed to be shipped to Japan to grow those layers out.
Yeah, and you look at Tunisia and Morocco, we've got schools set up there where we're teaching Africans how to raise chickens. The other school is teaching them how to feed chickens. And we went to Senegal in Africa a year ago, and we actually went to some farmers' farms where they went to these schools, and now they're raising chickens to feed their family, and then they're selling those eggs on the market, and they're really growing. And then we went to a feed mill where he had went through this school, and now he was importing DDGs, which they had never done before, and now they're putting DDGs in their feed rations. So all these things, I'm not saying Africa's going to be an overnight market, but that's a growing market, and if we can continue to get them to eat more meat and use our products, that's what we're after.
Let's come back to some of the domestic uses. Start with the livestock sector, and I want to take them by sector. Poultry eats more corn than any of the other sectors. There is a problem in both the spring and the fall as it's related to avian influenza. Do you expect that to be a problem this year? And can you see that in the feed usage numbers if you can divine them out?
Yeah, so there has been, you can see that in the numbers just a little bit. And yeah, I guess I don't see how we get past it, 100%. So I do think that will be problematic going for the next, at least the next year into the next marketing year. And it's also, that's also showed up in the export numbers for poultry. So U.S. poultry is off, and it's been a growing market for the U.S. Over the last probably 10 years, I suppose. And oftentimes those export markets are really the key markets for margin, right? So those packers and processors are able to sell chicken feet, chicken, you know, like all the bits of a chicken that we wouldn't necessarily want to be eating here. Well, there's a market elsewhere.
Pork production is the second largest user for feed.
Yep.
Doesn't appear to have problems. It's very steady.
Very
quarter
steady.
After quarter.
Yeah, pretty much static. On the export side, we are selling more pork into the world market. Mexico, again, is just a huge market for also the poultry growers, too. When you're talking about policy, a lot of that policy stuff can be really, it can make or break. And, on the poultry side, when there's an outbreak, they have to notice everybody, and then there's a pretty much a radius drawn around that farm, and there's no birds can be leaving. And there's certain countries that use their trade policy, not necessarily as a, you know, to protect a sanitary kind of phytosanitary situation. It's more of a trade barrier, but you know that. Thankfully, we've been able to work through those policy issues with the USDA and our trade partners as well.
And finally, beef production, which probably is under pressure from two things. The number of beef cattle continues to drop, and New World Screwworm, which had another surprise just this week.
Yeah. yes. So the herd size is incredibly low right now, and I think anybody who's gone to the supermarket to buy some hamburger recently understands that there's short supply, and the screwworm issue is really, really concerning, and so I don't know what I really hope that all the efforts that USDA and others are going through to develop the facilities in Texas and so forth. I hope, really, really hope that works out, but that could be problematic kind of across the board.
I'll come back to you for ethanol domestically in just a moment, but ethanol is one of the places that U.S. corn manages to escape the country. A lot of it goes north to Canada. Again, that is an issue related to policy. Can you tell me just about how much ethanol is used outside of the United States from U.S. corn?
Yeah, we set a record this last year with ethanol exports around 2.1 billion gallons, and we see that just doing nothing but growing. Canada is our number one competitor or number one consumer, and it's over 700 million gallons, and that's still going up to this day. We just worked in 2018, we had 0% of the ethanol going into Japan through efforts with the Illinois Corn Marketing Board and the U.S. Grains and others. We've been able to move that up, and now we have 100%. We are access 100% of that market, and they are switching to E10, and that's a billion-gallon market. And they're going to be at that by 2030, but we're trying to get them to move that up. Guatemala is another place that just put in a 10% down there. And so that's a 40 million gallon market. Costa Rica, Panama, those are all moving that direction. The Philippines is going to E20. Vietnam is going to E10. Those are huge markets that are all moving that way. And we have the cheapest, best ethanol out there. And we look at ethanol growth just skyrocketing from here.
From the Illinois corn growers' perspective, domestic demand plus the export market, but domestic usage, you expect to meet the USDA figures in the coming marketing year?
The way that I look at it is that we peaked in 2019 in terms of domestic ethanol consumption. And so we're going to probably see the slow erosion over time as, you know, just as vehicles become more efficient. I mean, this is totally discounting the, you know, electric vehicles, but your car gets more efficient, or the new cars as they come on, they're more efficient than the previous generation. So we really see this, if the status quo really not working out all that well for the corn farmer going forward. So I think that policy-wise, you know, that's one area where policymakers in Washington, D.C. and in state capitals can potentially make a huge difference for farmers in a fairly short amount of time. You know, that's right now we've got a supply. We have a demand problem, right? We really don't have a supply problem. We've got too much of it, but the demand is static to declining. So that's why we see the, you know, export markets being so critical. That's about the only relief valve that we have. And I mean, honestly, you know, coming back to this, you know, if we had all that corn back on the market, we would be in really, really tough shape.
Colin.
So yeah, I'm hopeful that domestic ethanol still keeps can expand, but I think that it's going to be really, really hard to do that short of really significant change in D.C.
I'll get a final word from each of you. I'm going to start with you, Mark, but Colin Waters, who you just heard, is with the Illinois Corn Growers Association. Mark Wilson is with the U.S. Grains and Bioproducts Council. Mark, a final word for the program today.
One thing about the U.S. Grains and BioPencil, we are working day and night because the light never goes out on our offices. We have offices in 27 countries around the world, and we're always working for the U.S. farmer. We're trying to get the products out there. We're trying to build demand. We're trying to enable the trade and improve lives, which is our mission statement.
And Colin Waters, your final word?
Yeah, I pretty much the same thing as Mark. You know, the Illinois corn growers, we're focused on farmer profitability. And we know that times are really, really tough. So we're trying to pull every demand lever that we possibly can. And honestly, we can. I would say that looking forward, you look around the tent here, there's so much energy and excitement around production agriculture. We will keep getting better and better at making more and more. This is a long-term issue. We really need to develop deeper, larger markets for our products, and whether that's in domestic markets or foreign markets, you know, that's what's driving us. So pretty much, you know, tagging on to what Mark said, we know that farmers are hurting right now, and we are doing everything that we can to improve that situation.
Well, thank you very much for joining me on stage here at the University of Illinois Tent. You've, of course, been listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday. You can find us online at willag.org, but more importantly, you can visit us at the Farm Progress Show tomorrow and on Thursday. When you walk in the main gate, turn to the right, and in about a block, you'll see the big orange gable banner that says College of Aces. Come in and see us. You have a great afternoon. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.